Hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Cheers. And welcome to another week of Happy Hour with yours truly and another amazing woman from the automotive industry. This week, we've got a guest who is a little bit different than some of my past guests. She kind of comes to the automotive industry from a little bit of a different perspective. She is an engineer. And she works specifically in additive manufacturing and 3D printing and applies that often to several projects she's been involved with that are automotive, kind of combining her love of engineering, additive manufacturing, and her love of cars, which she's had for a long time. She's an incredible woman who just does a ton of really cool stuff. I've met her through a number of different kind of cool things coming together. So I'm excited to share a little bit about that with you guys, as well as introduce you to her and have her hang out with me for a little while. So I think I actually saw her join already. I'm going to send a little invite to join us, and hopefully without too many technical difficulties, we will begin soon. Hello, darling. How are you?
Hey, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. I just reactivated my Instagram and I'm like, I don't even know how to use this anymore. So I'm looking here.
I've had so many women recently as guests who like don't have Instagram or don't do Instagram. And like, there is part of me that is so jealous of you guys.
It is nice.
it kind of is. Although I do love Instagram for a lot of reasons. Mostly the community of automotive ladies that I've gotten connected with because of it. But you and I connected in a little bit of a different way. And I thought we'd tell everybody, well, let's start with telling everybody who you are and what you do, introducing yourself, and then we'll kind of talk about the project that we're working on together and how you're involved, and we'll move from there. How about that?
That works, yeah. Excuse me. So I'm Allie Abel, as she mentioned earlier. My background is in motorsports, racing, those sorts of things, automotive. I grew up in southern Indiana, and I'm currently in California. Completely different lifestyle. I don't think I still have the hang of it, even though I've been out here for 4 years. So I came from that background. I used to race quads back in the day before college. Went to college, you know, thought that was a good idea. Got my degree and then ended up in additive manufacturing or 3D printing. So I did not expect to be here whatsoever. But it's so cool. I just didn't realize how awesome 3D printing was, because a lot of people, even still, they think that, you know, 3D printing, you're printing toys or just prototypes, but it's actually manufacturing and looking at it from a different way. And I just get blown away by the people that I work with and the projects that I work on, especially like the projects we're working on together. I don't know. How do you want to tell everybody about the project?
Yeah. So many folks who are watching probably already know that Girl Gang Garage is in the midst of another all-female build that is of massive scale. And because we're doing some crazy stuff on this build, some stuff which we cannot talk about yet, but a lot of it we can, but we're doing some crazy, crazy stuff. And so we got connected with Stratasys, which is Ali's company. It's not your company, but you work there. It'd be pretty badass if it were. You work at Stratasys. And Stratasys is a major manufacturer of 3D printing. Machines and additive manufacturing machines and equipment. And so we got connected. And then we also got connected with Women in 3D Printing, which is an organization that I didn't even know existed, which I think is like phenomenal that there are these organizations for women in these various kind of non-traditional fields for women to be in. And so we've been doing some work, Girl Gang Garage has been doing some work with Women in 3D Printing, as well as with Stratasys. Ali has been our kind of one of our main contacts with Stratasys at this point, kind of helping out with some of the ways that we're going to be integrating. That's the word I'm looking for. I swear this is my first sip of whiskey. I swear. integrating 3D printing into this project. So really exciting stuff. And it's cool because I have never really done 3D printing at all, but I've always been super excited about it, what it means for the automotive industry. So that's the background on how we met, and how we've started working together. I want to hear your perspective on kind of, because you've been doing 3D printing for other things, in general, but then you're also, specifically been doing stuff with automotive because that's your passion. And so how do you see additive manufacturing affecting the automotive industry and just how that all plays together?
That's a great question. So we have several engineers that work with the big three or with Volvo or Chrysler. I mean, all of the manufacturers, BMW, we work a lot with BMW actually. And they're looking at it from a manufacturing perspective. Anything that they have is production line. Maybe they're using end of tool arming robotic arms, and they need to instead of programming it and making an aluminum arm and testing that out for, say, like you're trying to fit a badge on a new model of a car or whatnot, we actually can 3D print the end of that. That way, if you write the code incorrectly or something happens and it gets broken, you're not using up that aluminum piece or destroying anything, tearing up anything. So that's an example. Jigs and fixtures, those are huge, huge application, especially with larger automotive manufacturers. So, I mean, we've been doing that for a long, long time. And they typically use what we call fused deposition modeling technology, so FDM technology. So think of like a hot glue gun, but thermoplastic. You're just squeezing out thermoplastic through a tube, and that's you're building up. I'll use my beer as an example. You build it up from the bottom, and you come up to the top, and it's layer by layer, just like a hot glue gun. It's really the easiest way to think about it. And there's plenty of other technologies out there, but that's one of the main ones that we see used in automotive, just because there's a lot of different materials that you can use as well. So we're really looking at it from instead of design for manufacturing, so you're subtractive manufacturing, we're adding material or assisting in your current application is where we play a huge role. There wasn't, from what I could tell, there's not very many people that have been involved in motorsports or aftermarket. So I work a lot with SEMA Garage, and it's like a dream come true to me. So that's I love my job for that. So being able to be a part of the aftermarket industry and apply things that are very custom and just out of this world crazy ideas instead of just doing manufacturing, that's where I try and get my hands into that kind of thing and work on those types of projects, just because it's not a traditional manufacturing approach, and that's very well established already. But I mean, there's people trying to print full dashes or full cars or engines. I mean, I'm working on a project now, and it's an LS3 engine block, and the guy came to me and he's like, "Oh yeah, I want to get this engine and 3D print it and start it." And you're like, "Oh, okay."
Is that possible, like to 3D print a working engine?
I mean, not with our technology, and not easily. I mean, it's I'm sure nothing. I mean, you can do anything. So for what the technology that we use and the approach that we were going to take, no, it was not very possible at all. You got to think about what kind of fluids are going through there. And whenever you're printing, all the materials are porous. So there's air, and you wouldn't be able to keep things in the right, cavities or anything like that.
Right.
So, I mean, what we ended up doing is downscaling this LS3 engine block, and we're actually going to put it in a glass case. And this teacher is going to go around different areas and promote. He actually teaches automotive and 3D printing at his high school. So anything to get students involved about, additive manufacturing or automotive or those together, which is really awesome. We thought that was the better idea. That stuff's really cool. And that's how we've been involved, Stratasys, and then my role in particular has been involved with automotive. But I mean, that kind of applies to all other industries too. Obviously, my favorite's automotive and all that, but
You're slightly biased.
slightly. But yeah, I mean, it's just cool to see how 3D printing and additive manufacturing can be applied to other industries. And I mean, And our customers and the people that use the technology, they blow us away every day. I'm like, you did what with what now? And it's just so cool. So it's very innovative. That's what I like about it.
Are you seeing more and more? I mean, I definitely, from the manufacturing standpoint, I see how that's been around and being used for a long time to kind of streamline processes and like the robotics arms, like you talked about, like it makes a lot of sense to be able to prototype stuff like that with 3D printing. But are you seeing an increase in like aftermarket companies producing or utilizing 3D printing and changing how they approach making things that they're gonna sell or customizing a vehicle that they are working on customizing? Do you see an increase in that?
Yes, not as much as we'd like to. So that's one of the things that, especially, I mean, I feel like everybody on this video call chat deal would know what SEMA is and SEMA Garage. So that's one of the things that we've been working on together is doing webinars, seminars, and trying to show, hey, it's not just prototyping, it's not just this little bunch of applications over here. You can actually do flexible tubes for airflow. I was talking about it being porous earlier, but if you were to seal that, I mean, you could use it for like a K&N is a good example, like a K&N filter, and using those tubing there, that tubing there, and trying to educate people on what's available. But like I said, there's a lot of time to educate us too. So I want to say that it's getting more and more involved. Another Penske Racing, Joe Gibbs Racing. They're some of our biggest customers, as far as, you know, in motorsports. Kandigit's another one. They use our stuff all the time. And they come up with these crazy ideas. So it is getting more and more popular. And I think part of that stems from getting involved at an earlier age. And that I actually didn't have any experience with that stuff at all. I thought it was silly. And I probably shouldn't say that, but I did. I thought it was silly. You know, I was back in college, and before that, I was definitely more hands-on, involved in. I grew up in a repair detailing shop. I detailed, and that's how I paid my way through college. I detailed combines. I think we talked about that at one point. I mean, that was a really big paying job because it was a lot of surface area. Yeah, I looked at it from that point of view, but being able to expose people and students especially to additive manufacturing, 3D printing, and getting that hands-on experience at an early age, I'm all for hands-on anything. Like, that's just how I learn. I have to see things. I cannot comprehend anything that's not hands-on. I'm just
Right.
super visual. So I think I'm kind of surprised I wasn't into it beforehand because you're literally printing 3D. So that definitely helps visualization, I would think. So yeah, I think that's part of it is just it's being exposed at an earlier age. And I think once those students and those people start graduating and working their ways into different industries, you'll start seeing it a little bit more and applied a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense though. Like you know, you talk about kind of like maybe you shouldn't say that you think of it as silly, but I think a lot of times, like, you know, we think about 3D printing, and you're right. We think about like Thingiverse, right? And people printing gadgets and doodads and playthings, and we don't necessarily think about the massive ways that 3D printing can be used and the types of materials. I know I was really naive to all of it, and you know, we started talking about all the different materials that you can print with and things that you can make and like the art of the possible. It was like I had never really been exposed to it. And I already thought of 3D printing as like this thing that was going to kind of revolutionize the automotive aftermarket, because as more and more people are using it, as it becomes more accessible kind of technology, like the possibilities are infinite and endless of what you can come up with, what you can make, what you can build. And I didn't even have any idea about what kind of materials you could print with. So
Right.
educate the audience a little bit who doesn't know about the art of the possible. Like what kind of materials, what kind of things can be printed with additive manufacturing?
Yeah, that's actually something that I want to kind of bring up too is the technology's been around for over 30 years, the main basic technology. I mean, you can build your own 3D printer and it's just writing G code. Like, it's essentially what it's doing. But it's the materials that make the difference. So there's different examples that I can give, and different technologies do different things as well. So we have Stratasys offers a PolyJet technology. So it's like a similar to an inkjet printer, but it's laying down resin and then using UV light to cure it as you print layer for layer. So there's a lot of examples for injection molding, for example. That's a good application because you have super fine layer lines. You can't do anything with super high heat or high pressure. It depends. That technology is not that great for that, but it has really fine resolution. So there's ABS materials, ASA materials, polyurethane-like materials. TPU is another one. Those are it's like a rubber-like material as well. And then you can get into some of our Antero materials is something that's really popular. So it's a PEEK-based material.
A what?
So it's really good for low outgassing. You can actually put it up in outer space. You can put it on, you have a little robotic guy that walks around on Mars. You can put parts on those things because there's low outgassing, high heat resistivity, things like that. And actually, one of my favorite materials is our nylon 12 CF material, so carbon fiber infused nylon 12. We offer, I mean, lots of people offer like nylon 11, nylon 6, different things like that. Nylon 6 is great for ethanol use, as I found out. I did not know that until recently. So you can
Interesting.
seal it, and it has great resistivity to that, as far as breaking down. But yeah, nylon 12 CF is probably one of my favorites. It's a little more finicky because you're dealing with chopped fibers. So it might not look the best, but it's super, super strong. It's one of those things where you use it and you're just like, I don't know how to break this. And it's just amazing what it can do and what you can print these days. I mean, I've seen food printers too, and they'll print pancakes for you or spaghetti or those sorts of things, and that's really awesome as well. But I'm definitely more into like the gnarly type of applications. I do prefer like FDM technology because it's used for more robust applications. So, yeah.
So, in putting it into like language, I guess that automotive folks would understand maybe a little bit more, like the tangibles of types of things that people can print. Like, I did not realize that there was such a thing as being able to essentially print coolant pipes. And you think of them as like, okay, that's a metal thing, or intake manifold, like Kindig did on one of their vehicles, like things that look like metal or things that actually are, metal essentially. Like, what are some of the tangible things that people can print that are usable, not just as prototypes, but actually usable in kind of end use functions?
And use parts, yeah. So a lot of people, like you mentioned, intakes or plenums are very popular, especially on Formula S18s. They've been doing that for a while. You can use various technologies for that. There's also if you want a lot of color, you can use PolyJet technology. And I use this example a lot in discussions is a shifter knob. We actually have different colors that you can apply and make different graphics on the outside. It's essentially like wrapping a label around a bottle, and you can put whatever picture you want on the outside. That's a good example. Or one of our customers, they actually used it for a speaker. Instead of making a speaker box to go in this old Detroit electric car, they 3D printed the entire box, and they had to kind of tuck it away and hide it. So that was another example. And then a lot of composite layup tooling. So if you think of racing and motorsports, it's a lot of tooling. So it may not be in-use part, but it's for an in-use part. So we have sacrificial tooling material that you can use, and you'd print. I'm gonna use my beer bottle again. So you'd print this, and you'd lay up on the outside, but then you would dissolve out as long as you have a hole for it to escape. Whenever you dissolve away that material, then you have your final composite layup tool. And I know Penske Racing uses that. McLaren is another one of our big customers in the automotive world. They use that all the time. Or like, there's another one. I don't think I can talk about it yet, but essentially it's like a skid plate and it was underneath the entire length of the car. And it was printed out of our Ultim material, which is a high heat material, and it was bonded all together in huge sections because it went down the entire bottom end of the car. So, I mean, It's just so endless, and I'm missing so many right now, but off the top of my head, those are the ones that keep popping up. So yeah, there's
Yeah.
tons of options.
I've seen people use, and this is something that I think is kind of interesting, being able to use 3D printed stuff as essentially like a buck for fabricating with more traditional methods. Like often when we're making a fender or a shaped piece of metal, we're using some sort of shape to build the metal around, right? So instead of using wood or using foam or using whatever, like to be able to actually 3D print the shape that you're using, or 3D print something that is ultimately going to get be a mold for fiberglass, so to create something and use it as your mold, as your buck. And I think that's a really cool integration of kind of like that old and new technology.
Right.
I just think it's fascinating. Like, 3D printing technology has come down in cost quite a bit, from, I don't know, probably even just like 5 or 10 years ago. So it's like more and more accessible to people. So it's been really fun to see how different smaller automotive aftermarket companies and individual builders are starting to utilize it in these kind of creative ways. Like, oh, I need a coolant reservoir that doesn't exist, and I need it to fit in this weird little space because I've done something crazy on this vehicle. And how can I do that without having to hand manufacture it in kind of the more traditional school method? So it's really fun. I think it's really exciting. I think to your point, like, as more kids are exposed to it, as more kids grow up with this, I think that we're really going to see an explosion in how additive manufacturing is being used in so many different ways, but particularly in automotive.
Yeah, and it's never going to replace our traditional methods, and that's one thing. You'll hear a lot of people talking about, I don't want them to replace my job or anything like that, and it's not going to do that. It's meant to assist. There's some things that it could replace, but it's meant to assist. It's not the same as traditional manufacturing in a lot of ways. So there's a lot of pushback, I would say, that I would see, and they're like, oh, I don't believe that'll work or this, and then you have to prove it out to them, and that's completely fine. But it's definitely one of those things where it's like you're saying, it's going to be integrated or intertwined with our traditional methods, but I don't ever foresee it. I mean, we even have metal 3D printing coming up pretty strong here. That's kind of a newer thing. So, I mean, there's liquid metal printing, there's filament printing. I mean, there's all different sorts of things that you can use it for. But it's still not quite the same yet, and probably won't be for a while as far as what you can, machine out. And if you have a sand cast part or anything like that, it's not going to replace that.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think you bring up a really good point. I know often when I talk about stuff like some of the newer technologies, kind of to your point, some people are like very hesitant about it because the fear is there that like we're all going to be replaced by robots one day, and and there's right, exactly. And I get like I totally get that fear, right? And yet like you look at the ways that additive manufacturing is being utilized, and it is, to your point, it's not a replacement to, it's a complement to. It's how can we take this thing we can integrate and improve our process and do more things that we couldn't do before. Like, I don't know, it opens up the possibilities. And I'm seeing like there's a particular builder, I'm blanking on their name right now, but they built this like crazy badass, I want to say it was a Mustang, I might be totally wrong, but they put a Ferrari engine in it. And obviously they had a ton of stuff that like there's no parts for that, right? So, and they did some fascinating stuff even just with like some super inexpensive 3D printer that like anybody could get, and they made like frames for their tail lamps and the actual tail lamp lenses and just all sorts of things that make really cool design stuff more accessible to just about anybody. But it's not a replacement too. You're still using it with all these other traditional fiberglassing, metal shaping, metalworking. It just increases what we can come up with. And like we've talked about this before, like my whole thing always is whatever you dream up, you can build, you can make it, you can do it, whatever the heck you dream up. And like, oh my gosh, that like 3D printing just blows the lid off of that, and now it like truly is whatever you can come up with. You can make it. You can find some way. There's resources, there's materials, there's cool creative solutions of like, okay, if I print this and then I code it and then I like there's just so many things that you can do. It's kind of overwhelming, honestly. We're looking at ways to integrate 3D printing in the Volvo build, and I think the more I learn about the art of the possible, the more I'm like, well, there's so much. Like, I want to do all of the things, right? It's like a little overwhelming.
And yeah, I mean, I visited there a few weeks ago, and we were talking about a couple different things, and oh, we can print this, or we can do that, and what about that? And I was like, oh yeah, well, what about over here? And then you brought up something. I was like, I didn't even think of that. So, I mean, there's just so many different possibilities, and that's why, I mean, yes, Stratasys is very well established, and it has a lot of application guides, and this is how you bond this. This is the bonding agent to use and epoxy to use, but this is how you sand it. But ultimately, their customers and the people that are using this stuff, I mean, like I said before, it's amazing what they're doing with that. They come up with so many creative ideas. And I kind of wish I would have gotten into it earlier and known about it earlier and didn't think it was so silly back in the day. But I was kind of set in my ways, very stubborn. I think that's a Midwest thing. So, yeah, I mean, that's what even thinking about. So I had to do a marketing campaign a couple years ago, and they wanted to promote our new, at the time it was new as our elastomeric TPU material. And they wanted me to use it for an automotive use. And I'm like, oh yeah, just throw it under the hood and act like you're taking it out of the hood. Da, da, da. I was like, well, let's be careful. We don't want to like send the wrong message. You know, it can only withstand this and this. So instead, I printed a tiny gas breather tube for our dirt bikes that we have. And we still have the original one on there. I don't know how, but the other ones, I mean, it hasn't dry rotted even in California. It's still doing fine. And it's just thinking about that, you know, growing up and stuff, there's just so many different things. Or looking around the shop, and an example I use sometimes is if you're using a ratchet on, you're trying to put the final touches on a build or whatnot, and you just got the car painted, you're just so timid trying to get around that vehicle. And there's one of them that I helped with a build on. It was an older Mustang, but it had a candy apple red, super expensive paint, super, I mean, it was a gorgeous car. But it's one of those things, like with that specific paint, you have to paint it all at once, and you can't do it individual panels at once or at different times, or else it comes out slightly different colored. So just using ratchets and trying to work around that. If we would have had like a TPU bumper that you printed and put around the end of the ratchet so you wouldn't smack into it, just because, you know, you're trying to rush and get stuff done, you're still trying to be careful. That's an example that I thought of. Or when we did the exhaust on my car a couple years ago, my GTO, the hangers, they had rotted, and I was just being, you know, I want to get this done, I want to hear it, I want to see how it looks, you know. And I was like, well, if I could just print the exhaust hangers, we could like line it up and get it just the way I want it, because it's free design. I mean, I don't have to buy a certain one from the store. I can design it how I want and then print it, and then it's right there. So just thinking about how it could just be integrated, you just keep going with
Yeah, it's
it.
like mind blown. I mean, I think everybody can probably relate to like the number of times during a day where you're like, wouldn't it be cool if we had a ... right? Like some crazy thing that doesn't exist in the world, and or something that does exist but you don't have access to in this moment or maybe ever. And to be able to say like I could just print it, like I could just make it, and these like crazy inventions that you start coming up with because there's the technology to do that. And I just like it's so awesome.
I know. And it's just so amazing how far it's come. Just looking, I mean, the stuff that we're doing now, even when I started, it's growing exponentially. So it's definitely something that I think is going to be, like I was saying before, it touches different markets and different areas. I mean, our PolyJet technology, I pass out super easy. Like super easy. Like I think the worst one was I was in high school and we were looking at rocks of Africa, and then one looked like a brain. I literally passed out in the middle of class because it looked like a brain. So just I pass out super easy. And the problem with that is I can't deal with our medical industry and our applications in that because it's so realistic. I mean, they have tissue matrix, they have bone matrix, they even have it now to where you can adjust the infill on this bone, and it'll apply to, say, a 60-year-old man versus a 25-year-old female, because it is different structured at that time. And it's like, how are they doing this? I mean, I haven't learned it because it's just, gruesome to me. But the fact that it's so realistic, and the fact that you can use those to, if you're trying to practice, it's really good instead of using cadavers. It's just amazing how much far it's come in just the last few years. So.
Yeah, hearing about the medical use stuff always blows my mind. Like the things that they're starting to be able to print and that the technology is working towards. Like it seriously feels like I saw somebody in the comments say it's Jetsons, right? Like it kind of feels like that. Like this, it is crazy, crazy stuff that people are starting to do with 3D printing and the way that it's going to change our whole world. Not to replace people, but to kind of change how we do things and enhance our lives. I think it's pretty incredible. So,
Yeah.
how did you go from I think 3D printing is silly to specializing in it? Like, where did that transition happen? Like, how were you initially exposed to it and get into it?
So I was dead set on joining a NASCAR team and being a race engineer. I used to write letters to Stewart Haas Racing because Tony Stewart is my all-time favorite NASCAR driver, and that was our Sunday ritual. We didn't go to church, we watched NASCAR. So that was our thing. So I mean, Mark Martin back in the day, Bill Elliott, I mean, you have the Intimidator, come on. So
Come on.
that was so that was I was dead set on staying in that, and that's what I grew up around. And I went off to college, and I was still, dead set on doing that. And when I started applying for jobs and whatnot, I had an internship and different jobs and whatnot throughout college. But when I started applying, I was very, very particular. There was a lot of my friends that they just took the first job offer that they got. And I was not like that at all. I was like, oh no, like I want to do this. And I knew I was going to be moving to California. So that helped narrow it down. But then I was applying, and I had several different interviews. There's actually one interview that I had. It was over one of my breaks in college, and I didn't have a vehicle out here, so I was interviewing out here, and I've flown out here, and I needed to get to the interview, and I had to go across LA traffic. Being from the Midwest, I mean, there's cows, there's tall corn. You have to watch out for the tall corn and, combines and tractors and all that. But LA traffic, that's another deal. So I got out here, and my significant other had just bought his truck, and it's a crew cab stick shift Cummins. And here I go in heels across LA in rush hour traffic to go to this interview, because I had to show up for this person, for this company, because they specialized in diesel performance. And just the fact that I pulled up, I mean, I thought I was just the coolest thing ever at the time. And then no one even saw me get out of the truck. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Like,
So
damn it, can I do
what?
that again when you can see me? Come on.
Well, I mean, I did. So the one guy walked me across the way because they had two buildings, and he's like, where'd you park? I was like, on the big red truck, the big red truck, So I had to point that out.
That's hilarious.
I didn't get the job, by the way, so that's probably what killed it. Yeah, so I had several different interviews with that, but I moved out here, and I had a verbal offer for a piston company, and then they just fell off face of the earth, quit contacting me. I was like, okay, what's going on? And they finally were like, oh yeah, we don't have the funding for you right now for your position. I'm like, okay. So then I actually, what I did is I pulled up the expo list for the SEMA show, and I started cold calling all these different companies on that list. So I mean, there's a lot of different companies, and they're like, why are you calling? And like, I was like, this is what I want to do, this is where I want to be, blah, blah, blah. And then it got to the point, like 2 months later, I'm like, okay, haven't really gotten anything. So I did work for a company for a couple months, and I was driving 4.5 hours a day through LA. That was not fun. I probably would have stuck it out because it was like an aftermarket filter company. It was not Canon, it was a different one. But I probably would have stuck it out. It just didn't fit right with the group of people that I was working with. So if you don't have that vibe is what they call it out here in California. If you don't have that, vibe, then, I was just like, yeah, okay. And I had applied for a position with Stratasys, in my, hundreds of however many applications I've put in. And I like the sound of working with customers and 3D printing. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can learn that. No big deal. So I went in for the interview. I didn't know anything about 3D printing whatsoever. They're like, do you know what this is? Or do you know what that is? I'm like, no.
But I
that's what I don't know. So I did not drive the big red truck that day. Maybe that was it.
Maybe,
I
maybe. You
don't
never
know.
know.
Yeah. So yeah, so that transition, I kind of just fell into it in a way.
Interesting.
And then it's like drinking from a fire hose after that. I mean, it's a totally different learning curve because I'd never, my mind, even in college, there's a lot of classes I'd sit there and I remember one professor in particular. You can definitely tell the people that have been in either the trades or actually had a job. And then the people that, they've just teaching, and that's nothing wrong with that at all. But there's a particular example of a transmission, and they're like, okay, yeah, just assume these values are zero and solve the equation essentially. And I'm like, but that doesn't make sense because that's not how it works in real life. And I argued with the professor about it, and he's like, well, just assume. And I'm like, but that's not right. Like, I could not, my mind would just not transition. So it was kind of the same thing going from, what I knew to 3D printing, because I'm like, oh, how does that work? How does it print at a 45 degree angle and can't fall over? Like, I don't get that. So, there's a lot of learning on my part. So yeah, that's kind of the transition. It wasn't the smoothest, but that's where I'm at. So
Interesting. No, I think that's fascinating. And I love, there were a couple of comments in as we're talking and as you're telling the story about like your persistence and how you approached the whole finding a job thing. And I love that. Like, I'm just gonna find a way to pursue my interests in one way or another. I love the like going through the SEMA directory. Like, that's like, how creative is that? I absolutely love
yeah
it.
yeah yeah
Interesting.
I did not I, there I got some very strange reactions when I would call. So that was definitely a thing. But what's really cool now is a lot of the places I called, I get to work with them because of 3D printing. So there's different people, even my old my previous employer. They're looking at getting a printer now, and they're like, oh, hey, wait, we know this person. And I'm like, yeah,
Okay.
you know me. Yeah, I used to work there. And like I
You
said,
missed a
working
chance
with
to hire me.
yeah, so I mean, it's just cool because you get to be a part of different industries. And I mean, for me, it's different customers in the automotive world. I never thought, I mean, we went to the SEMA show. I've got to go twice now, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a dream come true. I mean, if I never get to go again, I will die happy. It's fine.
You better be there this year. You, after
I'm
participating in our
planning on
panel, you better be there.
it. I'm planning on it. Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I had to be persistent. Just because in my, especially my last year in college, I was working five part-time jobs, not
Oh, wow.
full-time. But I went to school full-time, and it was one of those things. I drove a truck. Like, I drive a truck as my daily. I always have. I refuse to like drive a small car. I have to drive a truck. So 15 miles per gallon, you can imagine it goes through it quite quickly. Plus it's older, 300,000 miles. It has lots of different parts breaking on it and lots of kinks and quirks. And like other people get in and don't know how to drive it, even though it's an automatic truck. So,
So what you're saying is you had to work five jobs because of your addiction to trucks.
well, I mean, I was either, I mean, I either had to put fuel in my truck to go to school and get to my jobs, or I had to eat. So like there's a long stretch there where I looked really good because I had to put gas in my truck and I couldn't afford food. So when I got out to California, I was like, okay, I have to eat. So I was very persistent, calling these people. I'm like, okay, yeah, can you hire me? I need food. So
Literally will work for food, yes.
Yes, I will sweep the floors. That's actually what I put in my letter to Stuart Haas back in the day. I'm like, I'll start off sweeping floors. I mean, those things do matter. And people have to do that. And I don't think I don't think some people realize that either. I think you and I talked about that. I mean, there's lots of pieces to the overall puzzle. It's not just engineers, not just fabricators. There's lots of other people involved in a lot of the builds that you see going on. So I think there's a lot of value to that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many different roles, and none of them are any less. And even the person sweeping the floors and emptying the garbage is a vital role. And it sounds silly, but it's a vital role in any operation happening. I think it's right, like a lot of younger people, I think it's this there's this impression that they're even if they've got a ton of education, that they're gonna jump into a job and be jumping in at this level, when in reality, like, if you want something, sometimes you gotta call a gazillion places and you gotta say, I'm willing to do whatever. Let me get my foot in the door, let me get started and build from there. Just give me an opportunity, and to be willing to do whatever needs to be done. I mean, anything that's legal, moral, and ethical, just to, caveat that a little bit. But yeah. So what did you study in college? What was your degree in?
Mechanical engineering.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't know I wanted to do engineering there for a while. And I was trying to figure it out. And then I was like, okay, I took drafting class in high school and it was all by hand, but I absolutely loved it. Actually, to this day, also probably should not be saying this in case, Stratasys watches this, but I'm not the absolute best at 3D modeling. I can handle like my day-to-day stuff, but like SolidWorks, I actually prefer, and it's like I said, it's one of those weird things where I am a visual learner, but actually drawing it out and handwriting notes and that sort of thing, I really still am one of those people. So yeah, I didn't know that I wanted to do mechanical engineering until probably I was like 16, 17. And then
That's
I was
still
like,
really
okay.
early to know what you want to do.
I mean, I wanted to be hands-on. I wanted to be able to problem solve. I mean, like back in the day, I was horrible at math and science. That's actually my worst scores and everything. I don't know why I chose engineering, or I don't know what I was thinking. But back in the day when you had, in school, you have the math problems where it's like Betty drove 5 miles and then she turned and you have to figure out the big word, long word problems. I always love those. So I feel like just being engineering and, doing that, you're just an expert problem solver. It's a glorified problem solver. So I mean, it doesn't really matter what the problem is, it's just as long as you enjoy finding a solution to it. So I think that's kind of what drove me. And then like I said, trying to tie that in with automotive or now 3D printing or whatever it may be. That's kind of where that came from, I think.
No, I love that, and it's interesting, and I think we've talked about this a little bit too. Like, I see auto mechanics and fabricators and car builders like in the same way. Like, we're professional problem solvers and puzzle doers, right? Like, it's like, let me figure out how this thing works, how I can take it apart, how I can put it back together, how I could make it better, how can I create something out of nothing? And it's interesting to me, like the kind of the difference in social perception of I'm an engineer versus I'm an auto mechanic, right? There's like this, like that's one layer of it. And then there's also just this, like, there's so many ways to be a part of the automotive industry that we don't necessarily think of. And being in the automotive industry doesn't necessarily mean just being a technician or being a shop owner or being a service advisor, that there's like 9,000 different ways that you can be in the automotive industry coming from all of these different perspectives, and how much similarity there is across these different career paths.
I think we did talk about that as far as I know there's a lot of people or parents or whoever, grandparent, I don't whoever, that push for their kids or younger people to be, hey, you have to be a lawyer, you have to be an engineer, you have to be a doctor because that's the big paying bucks and all that. And I honestly call bullshit on that because I mean, what are we losing in the trade? What are we? We need more welders. We need underwater welders. We need the underwater basket weavers or whatever they do. Like we need these people. You look at, and I think that's why you see a lot of pushback. Whenever I walk into a customer site and you have the baby boomers over there, and that's they're doing their thing and they're running that CNC or they're milling whatever. They have so much more knowledge in their pinky baby toe than I could ever try and fathom. Like, and I don't think a lot of the younger generations realize that or respect that. And it definitely needs to be pushed a lot harder. I mean, we're going to need that. There's going to be a shortage. That's what keeps America and the whole world running, supply chain. I mean,
literally, yeah.
Exactly. And it's not just the people at the top or whatever, you know, don't want to go that direction with that conversation, but we definitely need those sorts of people that are hands-on and understand that and aren't afraid to get dirty and, you know, work on things. And I try to look at it. The way I grew up, I mean, I worked for my uncle for the longest time. I was like 13 until I was 18 or 19. And there is so many times where he would be like, oh, screw this engineer. Oh, who designed this? Who did that? Engineers, like all this. And then I go up and it's like, I'm going to be an engineer. it's one of those things where you try and balance out the common sense things with the, you know, the very theoretical, because engineers typically deal, like I was giving the example earlier with the transmission, very theoretical situations. And when you get to the real world, it's like, oh, that's not how that works. We were just, it was easy and a clean answer on a piece of paper. That's not actually engineering. And like you were saying, it's not just engineers that are problem solvers. It's so many other people, fabricators, builders, welders, whatever. That's my brother. He's been doing fabricating and rock crawling and building out buggies and Jeeps and all kinds of things for almost, I think it's like 30 years now. That's all he knows. It's all he does. But when I really get stuck on something, I'm calling him. He's not the one that went to college and got the degree. And that I think that we need to recognize that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's the different types of intelligence, right? Like there are so many different types of intelligence, and no one is the right or the most important or the best or you know, any more crucial to the world. Like, we need all these different types of intelligence. I meet people all the time who maybe never graduated high school or are completely illiterate, literally can't read. And yet they are so insanely smart in other ways that aren't traditionally recognized as being intelligence. So it is, it's a really interesting thing. And the whole mechanics versus engineers thing, like, also a really valid point. I curse engineers often.
I'm pretty sure I walked into your garage and you started cursing me out. Maybe as a joke, but you're like, we were just talking about engineers. I'm like, yeah.
We were. I mean, I think every technician or every like home builder or mechanic has experienced that point where you're like, why the hell did they put this bolt in that direction? Yeah. Like, did they build the entire car around this bolt? Like, what happened here?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's what, I went to school with a lot of people that they didn't know how to use a screwdriver. They didn't know what a drill was. They didn't know a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't know how to do either. So, I mean, I get that, but, I was just shocked, especially coming, okay, maybe if you're in computer science or, cause I went to an all engineering school for the most part. And that was engineering all around. There wasn't any, liberal arts or anything else like that. It was only engineering, very technical. I was like, okay, I can give them a little slack if they're, you know, software engineering or they don't deal with that type of thing. But even the people that I expected to have some kind of mechanical inclination, I was like, what are you doing with that screwdriver? Or like, what's going on over there? What's happening?
You don't hold that end.
Right. And that's what one of my part-time jobs was, actually a building supervisor for all of our, we had a welding shop and a machine shop, and it actually keeps expanding, which I'm super thrilled about, but it housed all of our different clubs that we have. So Concrete Canoe or Formula SAE, we had one that was specifically for drag racing. I think they actually got rid of that one, sadly. Robotics, a bunch of different ones. So a lot of things where you're building and doing stuff, but it was just amazing. You know, you'd see the people that didn't understand how to use machines or whatnot, and you just be like, oh my gosh, whenever you're adjusting the top of the mill and you're trying to tighten things down, and then they turn it on and things go flying, and you're like, oh, like how did that happen? So yeah, I was just surprised. And at the same time though, there's a lot of things that they taught me. So
Right.
it goes both ways, definitely.
No, definitely. And I think that's like the challenge with how we tend to like separate as a society, how we tend to separate different types of skills rather than like giving our kids like a really holistic kind of experience and like lots of different ways. Like we tend to put kids like, okay, there's the hands-on kids, there's the academic kids, there's the ones who are going to go be lawyers, the ones who are going to be engineers, like, but we segment it. And the downside of that is you don't get that understanding of people in different positions and doing different jobs. So there isn't that shared, like, okay, I don't do this job, but I get what's involved in it, or I have respect for it because I've at least been exposed to it. And I think that's a real disservice we do to our kids and our world, really.
So yeah, I mean, the more we can promote anything where it's, I mean, I'm gonna be advocate for hands-on anything. It's just how I am. But yeah, we definitely need to make sure that we're promoting things that are, like I said, I keep going back to welding, things like that. So anything hands-on.
Absolutely. Somebody asked a question that I had wanted to ask anyway. I'm totally mispronouncing it. It's probably a word that I'm just not like getting because my brain isn't working right now. But asked, did you face a lot of sexism as a woman engineering student?
Yes and no. I think I was a little more conditioned than some of the others, just because some of the other females in, I'm just trying to clear my screen, in my school, just because of, growing up in a shop and being around mechanics who kind of curse like sailors and things
We
like
do
that.
not. We don't fucking curse.
Yeah, no way. So I think I was a little more prepared for it than others, but so kind of to give an example, my school that I went to, all engineering school, private school, so I had to work the five jobs. They didn't allow women in until the mid-90s.
Oh, wow.
So one of my part-time jobs that I started off with was it's called Phone-a-thon. And you had to call and ask for donations to the school because it's privately funded and all this whatnot. We have to have all our cool stuff, cool things that we have, our mills and our lathes and things like that. There was a few times where I would call alumni and they'd pick up and it'd be an older gentleman and he'd be like, "No, I'm not going to talk to you. I want to talk to a male student." Like he just would not talk to me. I'm like, okay, and I would just keep talking. I'm like, that's fine. And that's, I get that. That's fine. Whatever. But at the same, I'm going to get you the same result as whoever Joe Schmo sitting next to me or my friend Gary. I work with Gary. Same result. So that I did see it occasionally, from that aspect. And then as far as, engineering automotive, like I said, I think I just kind of got used to it. And I don't look at it like that. I don't think there should be, there shouldn't be, women versus men engineering or automotive or boating or whatever, when it comes to those sorts of things. I think it should be based on what you can do and your performance and how well you are doing those things. That's how I look at it. But I also understand from a point that there are a lot of females that did not have the same privileges that I did and get to be around that stuff, and they're scared or they're intimidated, or there's a lot of, that's why I like dealing with a lot of the students, younger girls that are like, "Hey, how did you do this or how did you do that?" And it's like, just go for it. I mean, you kind of gotta grow a pair in a way, to, withstand some of it. But at the same time, if they're dishing it, but then they can't take it, because a lot of times that does happen, then there's those people. But honestly, if you're just doing your job and you're doing it well, it doesn't matter either way. So I tend to get along with most people, I think. I don't know. But yeah, so I did see some of that. in college and in my job to this day. I mean, there was one phone call last year that I had, and he's like, "Are you even an engineer? Can you provide me your credentials?" And I'm like, "Yeah." So, I mean, and like the sales guy had to step in, and he was like, "Yeah." Like, and I hadn't done anything wrong. It's just because I was female. But I do see it, yes, but I don't really care.
Yes, you didn't let it stop you. Yeah.
And some people aren't built that way, and that's perfectly fine. That's them. That's how they handle it. That's fine.
I feel like there's been a real like conscious kind of proactive push on in engineering to bring more women in. Are you seeing an increase in women in engineering?
Yes, I am. But what worries me is the fact that kind of a sensitive, I guess, answer to that is the fact that there's a lot of schools, or a lot of even jobs, corporations, and people that will hire a female over a male just because they want the numbers. They want to look better. But, hey, we hired this female. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, but can she do the job? Like that's what it comes down to, in my opinion. So I am seeing that increase, but there's a lot of times where they won't be able to, perform up to what they should be able to. So yes, but for the right reasons, sometimes no.
Interesting. Okay. There's so much, like, I feel like there's so much we could talk about on like that topic alone. And yet we are at 4 minutes left in our hour to talk because this hour like flew by, because there's so much to
Yes.
say about all of these topics. Before we run out of time, a couple of things. So one question I would have for you is, if there's somebody out there watching this, male, female, doesn't matter, a young person out there, like how do they get into doing what you do?
So as far as like advice I would give, how would you
Yeah.
do it?
Yeah.
I mean, I actually did an interview with a Girl Scout. I had to answer some of her questions earlier today, and she asked the same question. And I typed out so many different answers. I mean, honestly, if you're doing what you love, and you truly do love what you're doing, and you enjoy your job, and you're skilled at it and whatnot, just make sure that's the number one priority. It doesn't matter what it's in. It can be, you can go be a painter, you can go do whatever you would like. As far as if you want to be, I think that's first and foremost. But then if you take it back a layer, then if you're trying to be in automotive or in engineering or whatever it may be, you do have to work for it, but just start getting yourself involved in those things. If you don't have to join every club, you don't have to do all that. I mean, it does help. It does get you exposure. But if you don't have the privilege to do that or access to do that, start reading online. Download free softwares if you have the ability to do that. Go volunteer at a local autocross event and go to car shows. Just put yourself out there. Even if you don't have the money to do big things, that doesn't matter. Doing little bits and pieces adds up to a bigger piece. So there's an analogy that you have all these big rocks in a jar, but the little rocks are actually are holding the big rocks in place, and all those little rocks actually matter. I'm pretty sure I screwed up that entire analogy, but
Picking
you
up
get
what
my
you're
point.
putting down, though, I like it anyway.
So I mean, I think that would be the ultimate advice. I mean, that would apply to anything though, because to me, it doesn't matter what you're doing, where you're doing, as long as you're doing what you want to do and enjoying life and you're happy, that's all that really matters. So kind of
Cheers.
cliche,
No, cheers to that, and so very true. Perfect note to end on. We didn't even touch on like any of the like awesome builds that you've been a part of, all of the really cool things that you've done. So my gosh, we're probably gonna have to do this again at some point. I think probably once we've done some more stuff on the Volvo and we've done some more of the collaboration stuff that we're gonna be doing, I think we'll probably want to do this again. And we can chat some more and share some more of your knowledge and advice and words of wisdom to everybody. Having you on was an absolute blast. You are super amazing. You do incredible things. I'm really stoked to know you and stoked to be working with you on the Volvo. And I'm so grateful that you came on and shared your story with everybody. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I would say that I was a little nervous, honestly, because of technical difficulties. I should be skilled in that area. I am totally not. So I'm more worried about that than anything. I grabbed my beer. I was like, maybe if I take a swig of beer, that'll help clear things up. So, yeah.
The technology gods were shining on you, though, because everything worked out great and it's all good. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this. And make sure you come back next week for another happy hour and to meet another amazing woman in the automotive world in some way or another. And have yourselves a fantastic rest of your week and a fantastic evening. And I'll talk more to you guys soon. And Allie, I'll catch up with you soon.
Yep. See you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.